From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's USDA Report Day, the 10th day of May. I'm UFI Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the report and the numbers that were released at 11 o'clock this morning with Stuart Peterson's Jackie Vakes. And a bit later in the program, we'll see how it all impacted the cash grain market with the folks at the Anderson's Climbers facility outside of Logansport, Indiana. Along the way, we'll check the weather forecast and look in on the agricultural news too. Stay with us all the way through the Closing Market Report right here on Illinois Public Media, and if you can't, you can always pick it up online at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. We're now joined by Jackie Vakes. It's Stuart Peterson. Hi, Jackie. Thanks for being with us for a Wednesday.
Hi, Todd.
Hey, so USDA this morning at 11 a.m. released its May WASDE, or World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates. The unique thing about this set of numbers is it's the first look we really have officially, and that's because we see some numbers back in February, but our first look at the new crop, corn and soybeans in the United States. Can you tell me a little bit about what you saw in the numbers today?
Well, I'll break it down, Todd, by, 16, 17, and 17, 18. And, when you looked at 16, 17 on corn, they upped the crush and they lowered the carryout by 35 million bushels. It was a change, but nothing huge. It dropped the stocks to use ratio slightly. Now you look at 17-18, we have to remember that these 17-18 numbers are all based on, normal crop progress, normal weather, and they make an adjustment for any crop reaction that might come to either a plus or minus July precipitation. But they dropped acreage by 4 million down to 90. The yield dropped by 3.9 down to 170.7. And our price range went basically stayed pretty much the same, $3 to $3.80, with an average of $3.40. But, one of the things that if this would be realized is this would be the largest carry-in that we've had on corn since 88, 89. They dropped imports by 5 million, which, out of South America, they're not expecting we need to do much importing. Feed use was down 75 million, but ethanol was up 50 million. And that's basically with the idea that there's going to be a lot more gasoline use. I guess they must expect we're going to be out there on the roads all over the place. But the exports perhaps were the most concerning. That was down $350 million. And that's due to a drop in Brazil and Argentina's demand, which has been having a 1 billion bushel increase year over year, as well as China reducing their imports. They're going to try and force more domestic use. And, we're not surprised by that. They have a lot of grain over there that's not in the best of condition, and they need to clean it up. So ultimately, the carryout came in down $185 million, and that would still be the second largest carryout that we've had since 13-14, with a stocks-to-use ratio of 14.8%, down not quite a percent. So overall, now you go to the world side, not a whole lot on the world side. They raised the carryout for 16-17 by a million metric tons. That's due to the really expected good production. But they dropped 17-18 by 29 million metric tons, basically looking and saying, well, we're going to see more normal production in the U.S. and South America instead of all of the record production. So overall, it was extremely interesting. Now, of course, we know this all has to be realized before any of it can happen, but it gives us at least some idea of what we might be looking at for next year.
How about for the soybeans? What did you see there out of the report?
Well, when you looked at the 16-17, they dropped the crush by 15 million, increased exports by 25 million, and basically carryout went down 10 million. Carryout's still very large at 435 million. And when we look at 17-18, that carryout will become our carry-in. Last year, we carried in 197 million bushels. This year, 17-18, they expect us to carry in 435 million bushels. But when you go into the 17-18 level, they raised the acreage by 6.1 million to 89.5 million acres. The yield went down, though, to 48. That would be down about 4.1 bushels to the acre. And the range, the price range, is 830 to 1030, which means that it comes in about 9:30 on average, 25 cents lower than where we are right now. Exports were up 100 million due to less competition, they believe, out of Brazil and Argentina because they don't think they'll have as big a crop. And our share of the soybean exports for 17-18 is projected at 39%. That's below, but still near to our five-year average. Carryout went up 45 million bushels, and the stocks-to-use ratio is at 11.3%, up 0.7%. So, you know, it's kind of interesting because when you look at a 6.1 million acre increase, again, it comes back to what we talk about all the time, Todd. Yield is still the key, right? You know, because when you think of that many acres, you think that you're going to see a carryout that's going to jump dramatically. And with their expectations of it being down 4.1 bushel to the acre, you don't see a whole lot of change in that carryout at all. At the world level, basically, they raised the carryout 3.27 million metric tons based on higher production for this year. And for next year, they dropped the carryout 1.3 million metric tons, basically on a higher crush level. Those are really not what I would call extremely significant changes at the world level, but again, still a view as to what's going on.
I did ask USDA's World Agricultural Outlook Board, who's responsible for the numbers that come on the world side. USDA NAS, of course, does the numbers here in the United States. About one thing that was written up in this morning's report, I'm wondering what you think about this. You mentioned the exports are up 100 million bushels, and that was due to less competition from Brazil and Argentina. However, in the report, it pinned that not on a lack of exports based off of this year's crop or the size of this year's crop, but of the size of the 2018 early harvest. So the January-February harvest, I suppose, out of South America. That seemed a little odd to me. Maybe you have some insight, or we'll have to wait for USDA to give us some numbers, I suppose.
I think we're going to have to wait for USDA to give us some numbers because you would expect, you know, that evidently they think that there's just going to be less available. I don't know how you come up with that. I think it's extremely difficult on the part of the USDA to be able to judge right now, you know, with the amount of storage that's been built out in the country, just as to how much the farmer is going to continue to sit on it. And that's what they've been doing right now. They've just been sitting on it. So here again, you could say, maybe that's the, I think what plays into part of it is also what they anticipate might happen to the U.S. dollar and the exchange rates, you know, and whether it'll move beans out of Brazil and Argentina and not have them as much available for export. I don't know. We're just going to have to, there's too many questions and they need to give us some answers on it.
Well, we'll find those out over time and get those out on the air to everybody. Hey, one other set of numbers, of course, the wheat figures were there, although my understanding is that they deal with fact here, but do not include the weather facts that came after they had taken most of their survey numbers.
Right. I mean, that's one of the things I know that a lot of the general population becomes very frustrated with, let's say, with the USDA. You know, 16-17 showed no change when it came to carryout or anything else, and on the U.S. side, you know, and so I'm sure there are people who are complaining because of the fact that we know that the snow that happened out there certainly had an impact. But what you said is true. They're going to deal more in fact than they are in speculation when it comes to this year's crop. They're going to want to see once what really happens. And, you know, we won't know that probably until they even start to harvest because they're not going to speculate about it. Now, in 17-18, that's a different story. You know, the one thing different on the wheat side is, you know, the numbers aren't based on the same parameters that we use, you know, for the grains. In other words, normal planting or any adjustment for precipitation because the growing season is different. But for 17-18, basically they took the acreage down 4.1 million to 46.1. Yield went down 5.4 bushels to the acre to 47.2. And they gave us a price range of 385 to 465. And we know that in the wheat situation, that is very dependent on what the U.S. dollar does because their production, they expect to be down by 25%, dropping it to 1.82 billion from this year's number of 2.3. And so If that does happen, they do expect feed to be down 20 million, imports to be up 10 million, which I was surprised by. I don't quite get that. But exports down by 35 million. Again, you know, with corn being more competitive than wheat, that's not a big surprise. But the carryout being down only 248 million because that drop in production just, you know, it couldn't offset the other losses that they're experiencing as we go along. But their stocks use ratio dropped to 41.7%. That's down 10% from last year. So again, just saying, you know, that they expect less. And if it turns out that we've lost a great deal of the wheat out in Kansas, you know, in Colorado, those numbers are certainly going to change. There's no question. Now, at the world level, the carryout was up 3 million metric tons because they have a lower crush level for 16-17. And when you looked at 17-18, the carryout again went up another 300 million metric tons. And again, and, you know, partially because even at the world level, production changes couldn't offset the losses that exist. You know, it's just not price competitive in a lot of ways.
Well, it'll make everything interesting to see in June for the wheat, I know. Corn and soybeans could be interesting, depending on how much of the crop will get planted between now and the next USDA report and what the weather does for us. But
right.
Always, every month, it's interesting to see what the United States Department of Agriculture has to say.
You betcha.
About the condition of the crop here and around the world. Hey, anything else, or is it time to let you go for
well,
the afternoon?
Well, we're pretty excited. Our grandson actually is going to be doing an internship with FSA, Farm Services Agency, down in Washington, D.C., and with the potential for getting a job there. So I think it's interesting. I guess agriculture is in our genes, basically, is what it is, because our granddaughter is going to become a veterinarian. So we're pretty excited about that in general.
All right. Well, congratulations to you and to your family, and we'll talk with you again next week, okay?
Sure. Thanks, Todd.
Jackie Vakes is with Stuart Peterson, joins us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. This morning, as we mentioned, USDA released its updated numbers for the world agricultural supply and demand estimates. Its first look at new crop corn and soybeans in the United States were released this morning, and they made mention that the exports for soybeans for the 2017-18 crop, or the one being put into the ground here in the United States now, were going to increase by about 100 million bushels, and that was in part due because the expectation for the 2018 harvest in South America, the early part of the season. We wondered whether it was a mistake in the commentary, and they meant to say that the 2017 early harvest was not as big as expected, but that's not actually true. I checked with Seth Meyer, and he writes back, so yes, we project area trend yields and trade for the 17-18 Brazilian crop, which is not yet planted. We need to do this as the 16-17 crop and the 17-18 crop will impact the 17-18 trade for the U.S., which we put out today. Let me summarize that. It means USDA has increased the U.S. exports of soybeans for the crop that is now in the ground based on a lack of harvest from South America in January, maybe February of 2018. In today's agricultural news, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee yesterday endorsed longtime Iowa Governor Terry Branstad to be the next U.S. ambassador to China. There was never really any doubt that America's longest-serving governor, who spent a lifetime promoting U.S. agriculture, would have an easy confirmation process. It was reflected in the unanimous voice vote from the Senate Foreign Relations Committee and the endorsement of the panel's top Democrat, Ben Cardin of Maryland. Up next will be confirmation by the full Senate. Chuck Grassley has some thoughts on the timing.
I don't think it'll be up this week unless it can be done by what we call unanimous consent. And the leader ought to try that. But if it isn't, it'll be up next week.
Senator Grassley, of course, from Iowa. Branstad vowed during his confirmation hearing to use his earlier relationship with China's now president, Xi Jinping, to try to open China's market to key U.S. farm exports, including beef, poultry, and dairy. China is already the number three buyer of U.S. pork, but still bans pork treated with the muscle leanness additive ractopamine. China is also the largest customer for U.S. soybeans. Well, a White House staffer reportedly called an official in Canada last month to ask that nation to persuade President Donald Trump to not terminate the North American Free Trade Agreement. Multiple media outlets say the call came when Trump was preparing an executive order to end the free trade agreement between the United States, Canada, and Mexico. White House staff apparently asked for Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau to call President Trump to persuade him not to terminate NAFTA. The call is one of many steps thought to change Trump's decision on NAFTA, to renegotiate the deal rather than terminate the agreement. Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue also met with the president at the time and presented a map showing the economic harm terminating the deal may have on agriculture. Perdue, meanwhile, said over the weekend that NAFTA could be renegotiated within the next 6 months. And finally today, a robotic apple picker is inching closer to commercialization and possible relief from labor issues for the nation's apple growers. Abundant Robotics is in the process of perfecting a prototype that can pick one apple every 1 to 2 seconds, possibly giving the apple industry a solution to its labor challenges. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Let's check the cash grain market now with Pete Peterson. He's at the Anderson's Climbers facility where they produce ethanol outside of Logansport, Indiana. Thanks, Pete, for being with us today.
Thank you.
Can you give me a quick assessment of why you believe the corn market jumped 7 cents in nearby May and December was up 6.5?
Well, we had monthly supply and demand numbers out today, and the numbers by themselves were not anything, I guess, out of the ordinary. Some little bit changes here and there, but pretty volatile trade. The bean complex jumped up as much as 14 cents before being up only 6 in about the first minute. Corn is about the same way. We went from up a couple to up 7, back down to about even, and back up 7 again. So just positioning out there for the funds in particular, I would say at this point in time, you could probably just put a little bit maybe of weather in there, but it looks like today it's just reading between the lines and the supply and demand numbers.
And so when they finished it up, they said, hey, the supply for corn is still going to be fairly small and beans are going to be around.
Compare the two, yep. Corn would be, I guess, closer to the one that's maybe a little bit of deficit.
All right. So tell me about basis in your area.
Basis in our area has remained pretty firm. Right now at Climbers, we're at the option price of July. And our Delphi facility, we're at 12 under. And beans at Delphi, we're at 20 under. Like I said, basis relatively I guess stable at this point in time. I guess right now there's still guys that are trying to get back into the field and still delivering some grain to facilities to keep things pretty firm.
I take it things are still pretty wet where you are and they're not really moving then.
From our facilities here north, that just need a little bit of sunshine before they can get going again, a little lighter soils. But from here south, it's still a lot of lakes out there and just got to get those away first.
And how far along were they on corn planting before they got shut down?
Oh, I would say in general, the area here is probably 50% or better, but it's just one of those where right now not only do you have to worry about getting the rest of it in the ground, but what is in the ground or what is up is just, usually going to be replants. The corn that is up is the most sickliest yellow color you ever want to see.
So you told me that you were at option price. Was that based off July? So you're at 373 3/4,
yes.
Then
mm-hmm.
On corn. What is the bean bed or the corn bed for the fall and then bean bed too?
Let's see. Fall into Climbers, we're at 15 under. Delphi, we're 25 under. And the beans for fall, we're 40 under the November.
All right, Pete. Thanks so much.
You bet. Bye.
Pete Peterson is with the Anderson's Climbers facility outside of Logansport, Indiana. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. It's the 10th day of May. I'm UofI Extension's Todd Gleason, joined now by Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated. Hey, Drew, thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you. It's a nice spring day, at least in parts of the world right now.
Yeah, well, I'd kind of like to talk about that because we need some heat here in the Midwest. The corn's been awful cold. However, I'm wondering about those hard red winter wheat regions because they had an awful lot of snow, a lot of damage, and a lot of water. And do they really need the heat?
Absolutely. The crop out there is kind of limping along. It's been beat up. You know, if you stop and think about all of the things that have happened to that crop since the planting in September, it's an amazing road. But here recently, it has been a moisture issue. And, it wasn't too many weeks ago Oklahoma producers were complaining about a terrible disease problem. And that has managed to work its way northward and now becoming a real festering problem across Kansas. We got a lot of rain to fall in recent weeks, and a big snowstorm, of course, occurring not too long ago. And the moisture is abundant across the region, on the ground and in the ground, and it's still raining. And so the problem here is the temperatures are going to be in the 70s and 80s for a while, and we're going to still have all this moisture around, high humidity. So the rust and all the other fungus and disease issues that are out there in the Central Plains is only going to expand, and some of those yields may come down a little bit. We might do a little better job with some of the protein if we can keep it warm. But some of that protein is already past due. In other words, in Oklahoma and Texas, from talking to some folks down there, the protein levels have not been very good, and because of their adverse weather earlier on. So we're hoping that Kansas will come out of this a little bit better than the rest of the wheat region.
How about here in the Midwest? We've had some awfully cold and cool nighttime temperatures. The corn hasn't reacted well. That which is up, anyway, the rest of it's still laying there waiting to come up. We need the heat to both fix a yellow corn problem, I think, across a large portion of the corn belt, and to bring the rest of it out of the ground.
Yes, and I think we're actually on the road to recovery coming up here over this next 5 to 7 days. We'll get away from this colder, biased environment. 70 and 80 degree temperatures will occur over multiple days, starting as early as the next 2 days in the western Corn Belt, then reaching into the eastern areas by the weekend. So we will see some stimulus there for improvement in the crop, not only for germination and emergence, but also for those crops that have been drenched in way too much moisture and the coolness combining the yellowing that's out there, and just the environment is just not very good. But this will move us in the right direction, I think. And by the time we get to, let's say, about a week to week and a half from now, I think these crop conditions are going to be tremendously improved. And hopefully we'll be able to get into those wet and saturated fields a little bit better for planting as we move forward as well.
And finally, you have called the South American safrinha, or second crop corn, in perfect condition in the past. Does it remain that way?
You know, I can't find much fault with it. There is some dryness that's evolving now from parts of western Minas Gerais back into Mato Grosso, but there's some timely rain that's on the horizon coming up here for this weekend and into the first part of next week. And if that actually verifies, it'll be just perfectly timed, and the stress that's currently occurring will turn out to be just the right amount of stress to help the crop do very well with its yield. So I'm not ready to turn my back on the crop. I think we still have a tremendous crop in the making, and if we can get this rain coming up, I think it's going to prove to be an extremely important event, and will help to assure those late crops do well.
Thanks so much, Drew.
Have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. I'm Yovi Extension's Todd Gleason.